Case numbers 23-5300 and 23-5301. Zillow Incorporated v. Thomas Miller et al. Oral arguments to be 10 minutes for intervening plaintiffs, 10 minutes for intervening defendants, and 10 minutes for defendants' appellees. Mr. Michael Patrick Abate for appellants' cross appellees.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Michael Abate on behalf of the Kentucky Press Association and Louisville Business First. Your Honors, this case was brought by Zillow, a multi-billion dollar real estate company, in order to avoid paying commercial requester fees under the Kentucky Open Records Act. Instead, the trial court issued an order that required newspapers, who were not a party to the proceeding below, to pay those same fees going forward. Although the ruling was limited to newspapers, the reasoning of the trial court's opinion has no limit. If it is unconstitutional to require Zillow to pay the same fees as newspapers, it is similarly unconstitutional to require Zillow to pay the same fees as TV, radio, and indeed even private citizens making requests under the statute.
Did the district court rule on the TV station aspect?
No, Your Honor, solely because it noted that Zillow hadn't challenged that adequately in its pleadings. So although the court did not formally rule on it, the reasoning of the opinion in the next case would require the same thing. And in fact, tomorrow, my clients, the Press Association, could turn around and file a suit that says, well, now we have to pay these fees, but the TV stations and radios don't. And, you know, we could keep playing this game.
You said even private citizens. Are you referring to the litigation exception?
No, I'm referring to normal citizens who request records under the Act. Under the reasoning of the trial court, it was a speaker-based distinction. And the speaker would have been, Zillow would pay fees that a private citizen would.
You're talking about private citizens who are considered non-commercial?
Correct. Yes, Your Honor. Yes. Again, the court rejected the challenge on the commercial non-commercial distinction and accepted the challenge on the speaker-based or content-based distinction.
You're saying that if somebody for whatever reason wanted to complain about a non-commercial private citizen not paying, I'm not sure quite how they would.
Somebody who didn't want to pay the commercial fees, yeah. All we're saying is under the reasoning of the trial court.
But the standing would be a real problem.
Somebody who had to pay the commercial fees, say a newspaper, could come in and say, well, hey, this private citizen here could request the same records without paying the fee. That's not fair either. So I make the point simply to show the reach of the court's opinion. I think there are four ways that this panel can reverse what happened in the trial court. The first and most direct is to hold that Zillow did not have the right to bring a facial challenge to the statute under the Amelkin case and the United Reporting case. If this court rules no facial challenge, then there wouldn't have been grounds to sever the newspaper exception as a whole.
And they just go back and make the, start making the as-applied analysis, and he might very well come out the same way, and we'd be back here again.
Well, let me be a little parochial for my clients, as it pertains to the newspapers and Louisville Business First. In the absence of a facial challenge, the court wouldn't have had the power to sever entirely the newspaper exception. It could have enjoined an unconstitutional application to Zillow and excused Zillow from paying the fees, but it couldn't have taken a red pencil to the newspaper exception as it purported to do. The second way that this court could reverse, or should reverse, even if a facial challenge is proper, is to say that this is simply a subsidy. And under the First Amendment case law,
what?
A subsidizing of speech by the state. And under the controlling case law, as long as it is not viewpoint discriminatory, a subsidy is okay. Davenport versus Washington Education Association said that, and Reagan versus Taxation.
To the extent that any benefit is a subsidy, what about the Discovery Network case where the Supreme Court and Sixth Circuit held that you couldn't distinguish in favor of the New York Times and against auto dealers and Christian singles?
Well, Judge Boggs,
I would have called that a subsidy. We're letting you rent getting the benefit of using the street corner and not letting these other people do it.
Well, in terms of the actual cases, like I said, I think the closer analogy is Davenport and Reagan. In terms of the actual cases where government money is being used to offset costs that would otherwise be borne by a private party. The Supreme Court has said, and Davenport said it expressly, as long as it's not viewpoint-based, that it's permissible. So we think that would be the second way this court could reverse is subsidy. The third way this court could reverse is by saying that there was no need to apply strict scrutiny because this is neither content-based nor viewpoint-based.
Isn't it speaker-based?
Well, even if it is speaker-based, Your Honor, that is okay so long as that's not meant to control the content. The mere fact that it distinguishes based on speakers does not make it content-based. This court said that in Schickel v. Dilger just in the last few years. And it has to instead be a proxy for content. Here, the fee doesn't vary based on what kind of records you ask. It doesn't matter if you want tax records, school district records, police records, emails.
Arguably, could it be speaker-based because it's preferring newspapers and radio and TV as opposed to more perhaps commercial ventures like Zillow?
Well, we don't think it's speaker-based because it focuses on the use and not the identity. If a newspaper wanted to do the same thing Zillow's doing to monetize and sell the data, we would be subject to commercial fees too.
Well, now, doesn't it really do that? I mean, when I open the Courier Journal on Sunday, there's a list of all the home sales. If I want to look at the home sales in my neighborhood, I can go on the computer for Zillow or I can open up the newspaper.
But Your Honor, that's not what the Open Records Act has ever understood the commercial speech to be, and I think the Supreme Court's cases have recognized selling a movie or selling a book for profit does not turn it into commercial speech.
Really?
So, yes.
I mean, if a person shows up and says, I'm not a newspaper, I'm not a TV station, but I'm Robert Caro, and I want to look up Lyndon Johnson's records, and I probably am going to put it in a book, are you saying he's not commercial even though
correct.
His book sells millions?
Yes, that's correct. That's always been the case law under the Supreme Court.
And the same thing as Discovery Network, where they tried to say that the New York Times wasn't commercial?
Well, sorry, let me distinguish. News reporting is not commercial speech simply because the newspaper or the TV show or the book or the movie is sold for profit. That doesn't transform it into per se commercial speech. But again, what we have here is a statute where the legislature has expressly said, notwithstanding any of that, a newspaper, a TV, a radio station, or a private citizen should be able to access these records without solely for the cost of reproducing them, solely for the cost of the paper or the media. If you're a commercial requester and you're going to monetize it, however, if you're going to sell the data, which is a different use case, Judge Moore, I don't think it's just a different identity, then you have to pay higher fees. You have to pay the staff time involved in compiling it. And if there was a cost you require, you got to pay that too. I see I'm already at my red light. I'll just say the fourth point I was going to say this court could reverse is if this court found there was a constitutional problem, it could level up instead of level down. It could have said nobody has to pay these fees instead of saying the newspapers have to pay these fees. And we explained the reasons for doing that in our brief. So,
thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Darren Ford, and I represent Appellee Cross Appellant Zillow, Inc. in this appeal. Broadly speaking, the district court arrived at the correct result in this case, but did so based on an erroneous construction of the Kentucky statutes challenged by Zillow, which Zillow and the court below referred to as the commercial purpose fee statutes. It's KRS 61874, 8745, and 133.047. Notably, as we note in our brief, right from the outset, is we did not actually challenge the newspaper exception. And there is a very important reason for that. The newspaper exception, along with what you could call the television station exception and the attorney exception, are part of the definition of commercial purpose. And it is the application of commercial purpose in various provisions of those commercial purpose fee statutes that creates the burden on Zillow's First Amendment rights in this case. The newspaper exception standing alone creates no burden on Zillow's rights. It creates no burden on Zillow's First Amendment rights. We're not in a competition to make it harder for anybody to get public records in Kentucky. What our position is in this case, and is the basis for our claims in this case, is to say, hey, we engage in publication and related use of public records. The state hasn't challenged that. I don't think the KPA even challenges that here. We publish information for users free of charge. The only reason we don't satisfy that exception from commercial purpose and have to pay these exorbitant fees, and it's the difference in the deposition testimony in the case established, that it's a difference between paying maybe $50 a year for these records versus $124,000. So it's a substantial gap in what a non-commercial requester would have to pay, or a newspaper or television station or radio station would have to pay, versus what Zillow, who intends to do the same thing with these records, publish them for public use, public consumption, free of charge.
Are you contending that you don't fit within the definition of commercial purpose within the statute?
Not at all, Your Honor. I think commercial purpose is not a speaker-based definition. So the first part of the definition really just says if you are going to earn fees from your use of public records, an extremely broad definition. I have it here in front of me, but basically it's if you are going to sale, resale, solicitation, or expect a profit, either through commission, salary, or fee, then your use for those records is commercial. But the inquiry doesn't stop there, right? So a newspaper would meet that definition. If they're going to publish, as I think Judge Boggs mentioned, if they're going to list home sales and they're going to get that information potentially from the PVAs, then if they're advertising on the same page and they're selling newspapers and earning fees from the sales of the newspapers, they fall within that commercial.
They have the special exemption.
Exactly, and that's what makes this statute facially unconstitutional, is that the inquiry that the PVA needs to engage in is two steps. One is your use, does it fall within this extremely broad category of commercial purpose? We don't contest that fact. We clearly are advertising on.
Suppose that's the only provision in the statute. Would that be facially unconstitutional to say that a private person having no profit-making purpose doesn't have to pay a high fee, but the rest of the people who are commercial purpose with a profit-making motive have to pay a high fee? Is that unconstitutional?
That's maybe a different case, because obviously we have a statute that does have these exceptions. But what I would say in response to that question, Judge Moore, I think that just the very commercial, non-commercial distinction itself, so if that was all that it did, and there were non-commercial speakers who'd come and get these records, then you might fall within this Cincinnati v. Discovery Network case, right, where it said, hey, you know, trying to distinguish between these uses and trying to parse this, ultimately the concern of the court in that case and in other cases is it allows the government to, you know, enter into an examination of, is what you're doing something that we like here, or is it something that we don't like? And I think, you know, it wouldn't be hard to think of the kind of mischief that one might could think of.
You're saying that plain, simple statute that I'm hypothesizing would be facially unconstitutional?
I think that the evidence to establish that might be different than what we have here, right? Because we have a facial statute that draws these distinctions. But I think you would have to perhaps show that there were unconstitutional applications of that, and on its face, that it was a proxy for essentially favoring some types of speech and not other types of speech. Because I think, to the KPA's point, if that was all that the statute said, and a newspaper came in and they would clearly fall within that definition, they would say, hey, wait a second, this is an unconstitutional infringement on our free press rights. There would be arguments that they would make that just standing alone, it infringed on their First Amendment rights. And I think those arguments would also potentially extend to Zillow as well.
Is that because it's content-based, in your view, my hypothetical?
So I think that under Sorrell, you can look at just that definition and say yes. And here's why. In Sorrell, in that case, it was dealing with detailers and pharmacy information in order to promote, sales of drugs. And the content and the reason that Justice Kennedy found a problem with that statute was it prohibited marketing effectively. And so marketing was the content. It said, hey, if you're going to prescribe marketing and say you can't market with this information, then that is a content-based restriction on speech. You're preventing people that hold this information from disseminating that. The language here talks about solicitation. It's very vague. It talks about sale, service, so there are words in the statute that I think go beyond just saying, okay, this is solely proposing a commercial transaction. It allows for that sort of inquiry into, well, does this constitute solicitation?
End it says, or any use by which the user expects a profit.
Right.
So doesn't that encompass everything that's profit versus an individual who wants to know how much the neighbor is paying? property tax.
I think it's very broad. I would agree with that, Your Honor, but it does limit it a little bit. It does say commission, salary, or fee. And so unfortunately, because you know our statute goes beyond that and does have these exceptions, it does reflect the legislature's intent to favor, and I think you know there's a reason they did this, to favor newspapers and periodicals because they're the most likely speakers to disseminate this to the public. And I think the very underlying basic policy of the Open Records Act is to promote the free and open examination of the records. So those exceptions further that, and I don't think we wouldn't contest that. Again, our argument is, wait a second, we do the same thing, and that facially, though, you're still drawing these speaker and content-based restrictions.
Did you bring an as-applied challenge?
We did, Your Honor, and the court did not.
As a facial challenge, you brought both?
We brought both, and the court did not address our as-applied challenge. We did invite in our briefs, in this case, as an alternative ground for affirming, essentially, the district court, although we would nevertheless ask for a modification. But our as-applied challenge is, as Mr. Abbate said, different, right? So we would not ask for severance of any portion of the statute. We would simply say, hey, you know, we're maybe not a traditional newspaper. We're not, you know, a traditional periodical, but there's no question that we are requesting these records for publication and related use so that folks can go Zillow surfing and they can look at houses in their market. It helps liquidity in the real estate market. There's lots of benefits to the way in which Zillow uses these records.
Oh, as you're even closer to their other client, the Business First, which makes lists and rankings and things which are even closer to what you do. You don't have comics. Business First doesn't have comics.
Exactly right. I mean, but I think Zillow, and again, this wasn't in the record, so I don't want to go beyond that, but you know, Zillow does have stories. It does have other information on its website. It's not just that information.
Well, if we were to take the no facial attack and remand, then you would just press your as-applied challenge and you would hope to win on at least somewhat vaguely similar grounds of discrimination and so forth?
I think that actually the as-applied challenge here, Your Honor, is closer to the reasoning of the district court. It's just that the remedy would be different under those circumstances. I think that, you know, when you look at, and here the evidence I think is very clear, that in assessing whether Zillow was a commercial purpose requester, the PVAs were looking at, you know, I mean, they know of Zillow, but they're saying, hey, you don't tell stories. I think the Rule 30b-6 witness for the DOR said, you don't hold me accountable as a public official. Well, you know, those I think are all indisputably content-based, speaker-based, viewpoint-based. I mean, you can go down the list and find something one of those folks said that clearly shows that if they're trying to parse why Zillow is not a newspaper or periodical, and I think importantly as well is that they conceded that the fact that we only publish online it wasn't their position. It's like, oh, you don't have a print publication, ergo you're not a newspaper. That was not the argument they made. It was simply that the way that you use this information, the way that you tell stories, you are not a newspaper.
So you think the revenue position would be that bloggers would get the same break that newspapers do?
I think that's a hypothetical in our brief where we talked about, well, if it's a YouTuber, right, could they say we're like a radio station? And I think, frankly, they'd have the same case that we did for an as-applied challenge. I think they could very well say, hey, we're broadcasting this information. Yes, YouTube pays us. We earn money off of views. But we are disseminating this information for news or informational purposes. We should be treated the same way. Again, that as-applied challenge does not require severance. I agree with Mr. Bhatti. That's a very different remedy here. It would basically say, hey, you can't apply those commercial purpose fee statutes to Zillow. You need to treat them on the same wavelength as a newspaper. And I think, you know, again, this is an alternative ground that we did raise in the court below that the district court didn't consider. I think this court could also look at that here. So we would invite the court at least to consider that as a possible way to maybe expedite the resolution of this litigation. So in conclusion, as I see my time is up, I would just ask that the court, you know, look at the case and give us the remedy of either fixing the remedy here that doesn't actually afford Zillow any relief, or potentially look at our as-applied challenge and enjoyed application of the commercial purpose fee statute as to Zillow. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Rick Bertelson on behalf of the Kentucky Department of Revenue and the Property Valuation Administrators. To begin with, Zillow is a multi-billion-dollar corporation whose profits depend upon loading highly valuable PVA data created through the labor of state employees into its living database of homes for its use by its multitude of real estate-related businesses, not just its online property search website. Zillow's misguided constitutional challenge to Kentucky's Open Records Act is simply a poorly executed scheme to increase its profits, not by creating a new real estate service or by selling more ad space, but by trying to strip.
To a certain extent, Zillow does operate just the way a newspaper does, doesn't it, in terms of publishing the data from the tax rolls?
Perhaps, but you also have to look under the covers to figure out what Zillow actually does. And what Zillow actually does is it has a multitude of real estate businesses, home loans, renting and selling, branding real estate agents as Zillow Premier Agents. And during discovery, what we did is we found the Zillow's 2020 10-K report, and it showed that its 2019 revenue sources included $923 million from realtors paying to be branded Zillow Premier Agents.
But, I mean, have you looked at the Wall Street Journal every Thursday? They have this big section called Mansion from which they publish stories that are very much like what Zillow does in a different format. It tells you when, you know, DiCaprio is selling his $30 million mansion and tells you stories about it and pictures and then runs all these real estate ads right next to it. Just because the Wall Street Journal is a multi-billion dollar operation, does that make a difference?
Well, the difference there is that the Wall Street Journal is not the owner of those other businesses that are advertising on the Wall Street Journal's website. Zillow is advertising its own businesses. When you pull up, like say, you type in your own address.
What section of the law or the Constitution makes that make a difference? I mean, if you take my not hypothetical reality, the Wall Street Journal makes millions and millions of dollars for using public data, and then people buy the paper and they advertise. The fact it could set up its own real estate business, but does that make any difference?
Well, yes. I mean, the Kentucky Press Association itself has admitted that if it were to set up a website just like Zillow and use the data like Zillow does in a living database of homes, let's say, then they would have to pay the commercial purpose fees as well.
Really?
Yes.
Did they admit that below?
They did. They did. In fact, in their brief here, they admit that. But the thing is,
if they charge separately for the real estate section of the paper that they deliver to my news to my doorstep, then they wouldn't get the newspaper exception.
If they charge separately,
in other words, I can buy the Courier Journal, and then for an extra dollar a week, I can buy the Courier Journal real estate section.
And would that make them a commercial purpose?
No comics, no editorials, no Joe Girth.
Well, the case law says that the press is not considered to be a commercial purpose when it is reporting the news, and if it's reporting the news and it happens to use the governmental records in doing so, then it's not considered a commercial purpose. And in fact, you know, the department supports the Kentucky Press Association's argument here that the newspaper exception ruling was incorrect and should be overruled.
Even though you get less money, you're taking their side of it because it's the state law and you're supporting it?
Yes, the intent of the state
law. You get more money under Van Tatenhove's ruling, right?
I certainly understand that, but I'm here to defend what the written letter of the law is, and it's the intent of the Kentucky legislature to give a subsidy to newspapers and broadcast news and litigants so that they can get justice from the courts or print the news so that people can be informed about the goings-on of the government without having to pay this
commercial
purpose.
So why isn't that an impermissible speaker-based treatment?
Because it's based on whether or not you expect a profit from based on whether you expect a profit, but the case law indicates that regardless of newspapers being able to generate a profit from the reporting of the news, that doesn't translate necessarily into a commercial purpose. And there's always been subsidies for the press given by the Congress and by the several states in order to allow them to get government records or lower postage fees in order so that newspapers, magazines, and whatnot can go out to the public, and the public can be better informed about the goings-on of the government, which is important for a healthy democratic society. But in reality, this isn't really a First Amendment case at all, because the Open Records Act It only regulates access to government records. It doesn't regulate the free expression of any topic, idea, or message, and it doesn't single out any small group for differential treatment based upon the message or the topic of their speech using those records. And the evidence below, or the evidence in this case, shows that Zillow was treated exactly like every other commercial purpose requester who asked for the exact same PVA records during the same time period. We found there was 20 different organizations that asked for these kind of records, and all of them paid the commercial purpose fees except for Zillow, and some of them paid as much as $41,000 because they asked for all of the records or all of the property data for the entire county, which is what Zillow asked for. And, you know, these are like Black Knight, CoreLogic, Kentucky Utilities, the Louisville Gas and Electric, and the Kentucky American Water. And, you know, all of those people paid the commercial purpose fees. These data sets are created through the labor of the employees of Kentucky.
Was one of the things you just said American Lawyer?
Water.
What?
Kentucky American Water.
Ah,
oftentimes,
water company.
Oftentimes the utilities will ask for these property information so that they can do eminent domain if they're going to...
Just as an aside there then, when lawyers run title searches, do they pay the commercial fee?
I don't know the answer to that question. I guess it would depend upon whether or not they were using it for a litigation.
I'm assuming they're not in litigation, the normal title search. I mean, that's what,
right.
That's the bread and butter of country lawyers.
Certainly. And, you know, something also to focus on here is that the commercial purpose fee is attached to the making of copies for someone who requests copies. There's no charge if anyone wants to come to the PVA office and look through the property cards themselves, take their phone out of their pocket, set it on notes and scan every document they look at for free. So there's
so Zillow could come in and scan all the records if they wanted to.
Yeah, they could, and anybody can look at non-exempt open records records for no charge at any agency. It's only when you ask for the agency's personnel to work for you and to make records for you and to take time out of their day where they're not. Where they should be doing their other job to make records for you and to send it in the mail or by.
As I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, for a regular individual who wants to know what their neighbor's tax obligation was, they just have to pay a copying fee.
Yes.
But if it is Zillow wanting to know what my neighbor's tax record is, Zillow has to pay for the preparation of the record. In other words, the.
Yes.
And that's not just the staff time to make the copy. It's the actual preparation of the record. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
So in a sense, you're offloading the normal costs that you would have for making records.
Yes. I think in 1994, when the Open Records Act was amended to put the commercial purpose fees into the already existing open records, the legislature clearly understood that there is a commercial value to this essentially intellectual property that the state of Kentucky creates with this by creating these property valuation data. And it was their determination to allow or to have the companies that profit from these data sets to share in the cost.
And they're basically, you're amortizing at least some, if not all, of the PVA operation.
That is correct.
Okay, and am I right, it was something like one of your counties, which are not the biggest counties, was 40 or 50,000. Do you have the figure statewide? It must be in several millions.
I think the figure statewide would be about a million. The total for the six PVA offices here was, I think, correctly stated at 120,000-ish.
I would think statewide would be several millions because those counties are only a few percent of the state.
But the fees go down depending upon how many you're asking for. So it starts at one. There's like one cost.
Jefferson County, I would get a volume discount.
Right.
Okay.
So is there a difference in your opinion between an as applied and a facial challenge in this case? That was a groan I heard.
Transcript reads groan.
Right.
Um, In other words, the district judge just did a facial
right.
analysis. And if we were to say, normally you should do an as-applied challenge first, should we remand to the district court to do that? Or is it just going to be the same analysis?
I think it's going to be the same analysis. I mean, ultimately, the important thing is, you know, that, you know, is really to understand that, you know, I think to the extent that there is a principle here to be thought about in, you know, First and 14th Amendment case, I think Zillow is just, you know, it's not really a good plaintiff in this case because it doesn't represent, you know, a business whose only business is, you know, some kind of thing that you could call publishing, because it has all of these other ancillary businesses that all use the same data for the same thing. I think the fact that it perhaps has something in its website that you could call publishing, if you stretch the definition of publishing enough, it almost is moot, because you've got these other businesses which are home loans and branding Zillow Premier agents for a fee, and, you know, a bunch of other different real estate related businesses that have nothing to do.
Zillow structured itself differently and had one subpart that was doing the equivalent of publishing and used that subpart to get the data here, and then it transferred the data to the other subparts that I'm hypothesizing Zillow had.
That would be a sale, which would not be allowed because our contract for providing the data under a commercial purpose fee request requires that you not sell the data to any other third party. So they would still have to pay the commercial purpose fee if that were their intent. And that's exactly what the Kentucky Press Association said, that if the Courier-Journal were to set up a Zillow-type website and do the same business as Zillow, it would expect to be treated
as
a commercial purpose.
That's your rule applies if you sell the data in effect in some bulk, because, I mean, Business First, those book of lists, is pretty much selling the data outright, isn't it? I mean, it's much closer.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with exactly.
Well, at least when I used to read it, it's a publication, it's a business type publication, but they would have an annual or biannual special thing that would have lists of things. It's true, it would have some other lists, but a lot of them would be directly taken from the data. Rather little massaged, as I remember, Mr.
So
Labate may be able to.
I guess if it's kind of like a book, I guess it's treated the same as you treat press speech, and that it's not considered commercial purpose because it is speech of the press.
Okay, and your position on books would be the same as newspapers?
I believe so.
Okay.
Time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. A few very brief points on rebuttal. First, on the facial challenge point, this court said in Amelkin at page 296 that something that simply restricted access to government information, did not prescribe speech, or threaten violators with prosecution wasn't subject to facial challenge. We think that squarely applies here and takes us out of the world where we could sever the newspaper exception. The second point is to the question, Judge Moore, you were asking about content-based. I think the Supreme Court's City of Austin ruling is directly on point. There the court said, quote, it is too extreme to read the Reed case to say, quote, if a reader must ask who is the speaker and what is the speaker saying, that it's automatically content-based. The Supreme Court said that's not the test under City of Austin. It can be speaker-based, that's fine, so long as it is not meant to suppress a viewpoint or limit by particular content. And as we said here, you can ask for any kind of records. It doesn't distinguish between the content of the records involved. It's a use-based distinction, and City of Austin said that's okay. You can read the sign to determine, is it on-premise, is it off-premise, what is the function that it is serving. It's okay. That doesn't make it content-based. One other point, Judge Moore, you were asking about, is it, and Judge Boggs, amortizing all the staff costs of producing the records. I think we have to be very careful that PVA records are actually a little different in the costs than the normal Open Records Act statute. There is a specific statute that governs what the PVAs can charge. The normal Open Records Act provision, which is what is implicated by the judge's ruling, just says the cost of reproducing the records. It doesn't allow you to amortize all this staff time. Yes, you can charge for reviewing and redacting the records for a commercial requester, but you can't charge the like all of your staff and rent and the overhead that went into producing it for a normal open records request.
But for this, they
the PVA record's a little bit different. I'm going to defer to Mr. Bertelsen and exactly what, because it's a separate statutory provision. It's KRS 133, and I'm sorry, I forget the last three digits of the fee request. But the district court kind of treated them as one and the same, but these fees are unique. This is not the way you would charge if a commercial requester came in and said, I want, you know, all of the records of the school district that relate to whatever. They wouldn't be able to invoke that same cost provision. And then, Judge Boggs, on your last point, I just, you know, there's a major distinction here between what Zillow is doing and what Louisville Business First does or the Book of Lists. What we're talking about here, you know, that Zillow comes in and says, I want your entire tax roll. I believe the testimony was no media organization has ever come in and sought the entire tax roll, which is bulk data. Yes, Business First seeks, you know, give me homes sold over $1 million in the last month. It's a handful of records. It's very different in kind than coming in and imposing on someone the burden to give us your entire database so that we can use it and monetize it in all these other ways that have nothing to do with publication.
But could an individual citizen come in and say, I'd like all your tax records, your tax rolls, and not have to pay anything extra?
Could an individual citizen, under the Open Records Act, well, it depends what they're going to do with it. If they're going to set up their own business and try to monetize the data and sell it, I want to look at the entire tax roll, then I think they probably would not be a commercial requester under the Open Records Law.
Just to get a little more realistic, if you just take Indian Hills or Prospect or one of the fancy areas of Louisville, you could imagine Voice Tribune or some other publication doing what Business First does, but getting everything from that little snippet, or a freelance investigative reporter says, I want to look at every house in Anchorage, and maybe if I come up with something, maybe I'll write a book or an article or try to peddle an op-ed to the Courier.
But that, I guess I have two responses, Judge Boggs. One is, and we cited the Joseph Burstyn case in our brief, and I'll refer you back to that. The Supreme Court has said, look, the mere fact that a book or a movie or a TV is sold for some form of profit does not transform it out of the heartland of, you know, protected First Amendment activity like news gathering, like reporting. You know, yes, the New York Times is sold for a subscription fee, but it is still protected speech. But secondly, I think at the bottom line, what we have here is from day one of the Open Records Act in mid-1970s, the Kentucky General Assembly has said, we want the news media to be on equal footing as individual citizens, as the eyes and the ears of the public, to be able to request records that belong to public agencies so they can look at them, investigate them, and report on them, because it is a public good. When they enacted the commercial fees in the 1990s, they said, okay, we're going to allow some people to be charged, but not the news media, because they still serve this valuable function. We're going to subsidize their requests, even if they might otherwise qualify as commercial requesters. That's fine so long as it's not an attempt to control viewpoint or the ultimate content of the publication, and it does neither. They don't tell the newspapers what you can do with the records, what you can write about. You can have these tax rules, but you can't write about the owners of the homes, or you can't write about this aspect. Speaker-based is fine so long as it's not a proxy for unconstitutional discrimination. So,
and what's your best case if you were going to tell us to go look at one case that would support that?
That supports the speaker-based is fine. Two, this court in Schickel v. Dilger said, just because it's speaker-based does not mean it's content-based. And then the Supreme Court in Turner Broadcast Systems versus FCC. These are both cited in our brief, and they both stand for the proposition that speaker-based is not. The district court, I think, got tripped up there. He assumed if it's speaker-based, it's inherently unconstitutional. But that it's more nuanced than that. That's
and
not what the law dictates.
In Discovery Network, where in the sense it would have been a subsidy to let the New York Times have public space for free and not allow it for other people.
But I don't think that functions, and forgive me, Judge Boggs, if I'm misremembering the details of that case, that didn't function as a viewpoint or a content-based discrimination in order to do it, because you weren't, and that's the key.
It was newspapers versus auto dealers, which is kind of like here, right? Newspapers versus Zillow.
But again, as long as I think as long as it doesn't, amount to unconstitutional viewpoint discrimination, that's okay. This court said in Schickel just 3 years ago, not every speaker-based distinction.
Yeah, but Discovery Network did come out where they said you have to treat the New York Times the same as the Christian Singles and the auto dealers.
I understand. I guess our view is here, we think that the way that the Kentucky General Assembly has distinguished between users who wish to essentially directly profit and monetize this from users who, yes, may sell their good for some fee, but perform a essential public service. That's what the General Assembly has declared since the 1970s, that clients like Louisville Business First and Kentucky Press Association members are serving a public service which the General Assembly is willing to subsidize. And that's why I'll end where I started. We think there are these four paths to reversal. If you get past the facial challenge point, if it's a permissible subsidy, you don't need to get into speaker-based or content-based. As long as it is not viewpoint discriminatory, it can be a subsidy.
Thank you. Thank you all for your argument, and the case will be submitted.